Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. If you want to know why, very quickly, you want to know why Katie Couric's CBS newscast is going right into the toilet. She's interviewing Larry King on CNN even as we speak. This is a journalist? Oh, my God. I just... flipping through the channels, and I saw that. Obviously, I can't watch it during the program. Not that I would, but there's Ace News Lady, Katie Couric. Katie Couric is to news you need to know, the same way Condoleezza Rice is to being our foreign minister. Oh, God. Last night, we talked about briefly about John Brown, who was the head of British Petroleum until he was forced to resign, I believe, yesterday. Because a tabloid or two, newspaper or two in the UK had gotten permission from a judge to go ahead and publish private business about John Brown. Not that he was involved in any corruption or any scandal. Not that he was advocating one thing and doing another. No. Just titillating stuff. And the Brits love titillating stuff to the same degree, perhaps even more than we here in the U.S. do. But simply because John Brown happens to be a gay man or a man who is gay. Take your pick on the wording there. So the board of directors of British Petroleum accepted his, accepted his resignation, which brings up a whole host of issues. Another argument for people in positions of power not to remain closeted. If the public understood how many people in positions of power, whether it were in government, the military, industry, and pick your industry, oil industry, mining industry, it doesn't matter, academia, almost said Hollywood, never mind that one, just on and on. If people understood, your county commissioners, your PTA, parents of your kids' classmates, if every gay person in America would come out at the same time, the homophobes would swoon. They would just fall to the ground. Oh, quick, bring some smelling salts. Jesus, 80 million people just fainted all at once. So you can make that argument about John Brown. He should have just stated early on, if you want to know my sexual orientation, and why does anyone need to know? See, that's the thing. That's it. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up, a couple of reasons. First of all, I got an email today from Jeremy, who is with Puget Sound Solar. And he says, Mike, the really disturbing fact about the loss of Mr. Brown as the head of BP is that he acknowledged the reality of peak oil. In 2004, he said British Petroleum had to become beyond petroleum. Solar panels were put up on a gasoline station, on gasoline stations worldwide. Shell Oil drove out their visionary, who began its Shell, BP Shell is the company now. Shell drove out their visionary, who began developing a solar division. He's gone now, and the Shell solar facilities have been sold. So, if you want to join me in conspiracy stuff, and the thing about us conspiracy theorists, 9 times out of 10 we're right. Perhaps you can come to a conclusion, if you choose to, that Sir John Brown was driven from office, and this was the his office, the head of BP, and this was the means and the method it was used to do it, to reveal his private life. Now, having said that, I also got an email, a couple as a matter of fact, from people who suggested hypocrisy on my part about John Brown and Ted Haggard, or other gay-bashing homophobes who turn out to have an aspect of their lives that is, in fact, homosexual. And the gist of these two emails were, and they, I don't know, they might have been written by the same people or suggested by their local minister, but, excuse me, the gist of the two emails was there was hypocrisy on my part for being sympathetic to Sir John Brown and being less than sympathetic to Ted Haggard. Now, I didn't answer the emails. I thought I would do it on the program because, I can't understand the idiocy or the stupidity or the lack of logic that comes along with those emails. Sir John Brown didn't go out of his way to be active or head an organization that constantly beats up on people because they happen to be gay. Ted Haggard did. The homophobes in this society and in the UK are the ones who are and so many religious fundamentalists, whether they're Islamic or Jews or Christians, it really doesn't matter. These fundamentalists all have picked gay folk as a target that they know they can get their brain dead followers all salivating about, and it usually results in money in the collection plate on Saturday or Sunday, whenever these folks worship. I have no idea, but and I don't care. But anyone who can't see the difference between talking about, in a positive sense, Sir John Brown and all the things that he did, and the fact that the revelation of his sexual orientation was nothing more than a deliberate attempt to embarrass and crush him. Now, that brings me back to the first part. Had John Brown been an out gay man, this never would have happened. Because then these crappy little tabloids in the UK would not have had the little titillating stories to tell to their, room temperature IQ readers. It just wouldn't have happened. So it to me, it makes a strong case. It always has. I was convinced early on by a lot of folks who, friends of mine who happen to be gay, who suggested, Malloy, the problem here is not necessarily the ignorance and bigotry of homophobes. That can be overcome. The problem is the utter refusal on the part of people who are deeply closeted, or even not so deeply closeted, to come out and say, yes, by God, if you need to know who I sleep with people of the same sex. So what? And the point made to me was that if people who are in these various positions of power, in various industries and governments and yada, 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 if those people would just step out of the closet and say, yeah, we're here, we're queer, get used to it, then perhaps by this point in our history, we would have gotten used to it. And my argument to that was always, yeah, you think that'll work? Look at black folk. So, I don't know. You pay your money, you take your choice. But to the people who wrote to me and said, I'm a hypocrite about this issue, kiss my grits, okay? Your mama's a hypocrite. This is from Bob in Winston-Salem. A couple emails here before we get into the hardcore part of the program. Bob writes, Mike, listening to a recording of your Tuesday night show, you read an email from Claudia in Kentucky indicating that all members of the Senate Intelligence Committee knew about the lies taking us to war. I believe if you researched this, it was only the chairman and ranking member of the committee who were privy to these closed-door meetings and could not reveal the contents of the meetings, even to other members of the committee. This does not excuse Senator Durbin, but it explains why he voted no in the committee while others voted yes. Okay, fair enough. I don't do on-the-spot research, and I probably should. By the same token, Claudia's point, and I think my emailer here, agrees, Bob, Claudia's point was well taken, that it's the hypocrisy. What did the Clinton camp say? It's the economy, stupid. It's the hypocrisy, stupid. Would make a good Democratic Party campaign slogan, wouldn't it? This is from AJ in Seattle. Mike, wish I could write one of those eloquent emails that you are always reading on the air, but let me just say I'm with you. Durbin and the others had a duty to this country that to me supersedes loyalty to the intelligence community. Give me a break. And yes, resign, Mr. Durbin. I also agree all Republicans are scum. If you still admit you're a member of this party, then you are with them all, and they stand for nothing but greed and power. I will keep listening, Mike, because my friends and family get so tired of my ranting and raving. And when you are on, I know there's someone else as mad and as sad as I am, AJ in Seattle. Well, there are lots of us, AJ, who are very pissed off, and the time will come. The tipping point will be reached. It will, unless the Democrats can do something to prevent the tipping point from being reached. But if it is reached and the barricades go up, at least most of us know which side we'll be on and who will be locked and loaded beside us. The question is, who ought to make that decision, the Congress or the commanders? And as you know, my position is clear. I'm a commander guy.
Dumb bastard. Okay. Did he say that today?
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, if you read the White House transcript, he said a lot more than that.
They edited it,
didn't But they? If you watch the White House video, there's lots missing, like him saying internets again and talking about how great it is for the kids in Iraq to be able to emails home.
He's the commander guy, though. That, you know, other than the fact that that sounds like something a five-year-old would say, No. It's too early in the program. I'm not going to do it. I am not going to go over the edge. Maybe later tonight.
Yeah, right.
No. I got an email here from BF. And this is, we talked about this last week. You remember the pipe bomb that was left outside an Austin, Texas abortion clinic. And just to reiterate, the assistant police chief in Austin, Texas says it was configured in such a way to cause serious bodily injury or death. The device was found in the parking lot last Wednesday by an employee at the Austin Women's Health Center, which is a clinic along Interstate 35 south of downtown Austin, where abortions are provided. Austin police, working in concert with federal authorities, defused the explosive after shutting down all four southbound lanes of Interstate 35 and evacuating the buildings around the parking lot. And according to Vicky Saporta, who's the president of the National Abortion Federation, a D.C.-based group representing abortion providers, this is the first attempted bombing of an abortion clinic in the United States this year. And this fact is tacked on here. 41 clinic bombings have been reported in the past 30 years. We had a couple of them here by the, what do they call him, Kathy, the bomber, the Olympic bomber. Remember the guy, the crazy psycho that ran into the woods in North Carolina. But what brings this to my attention again, even though we talked about it last week, BF writes, what about these terrorists? How come we never hear about this hour upon hour on CNN? And that's a fair question. You know, terrorism is terrorism, isn't it? Putting a bomb outside a clinic that performs legal medical procedures, abortions that are still legal in every state in the United States, I believe. They are certainly legal in Texas, even though doctors that perform abortions are becoming fewer and fewer. But this is an act of terrorism that could have injured, according to the assistant police chief there, injured or killed people. And it is totally and completely, as far as I know, ignored. That was from the Houston Chronicle. You all are familiar with Jim Hightower, and you may not be completely familiar with the one of the benchmarks that Bush and these murderous sons of bitches are demanding of Iraq. The Iraqis have to give up their oil, literally. Now, as you know, those of us in the anti-war left, which probably includes you, have been screaming this since this before this filthy, murderous invasion and occupation occurred. And 600,000 people of Iraqis were murdered, and 3,500 American soldiers were murdered by this son of a bitch. Oh, my God. Oh, no. Deep breath. But we have all been saying, no blood for oil, then it was all about oil. Jim Hightower has something here I'm going to share with you when we come back after this break. And then there's a website. It is Oil Change International. And Oil Change International also has a quick, brief article that I want to share with you. But if you have any doubts, if you're sitting there and you're a brain-dead Republican and you're not watching Glenn Beck explain tonight, I think he's doing it tonight on CNN Headline News, why Al Gore is like the Nazis who sent the Jews to the death chambers. That's what this unconscionable son of a bitch. Now, I'm waiting, and I hope I see it. I hope I see AIPAC, and I hope I see every single the Anti-Defamation League. I would assume that they will rally their troops and that by tomorrow morning, CNN headlines will have received hundreds of thousands of complaints against this son of a bitch, Glenn Beck, who is on CNN and explaining to people why Al Gore's action with his movie is the same as Adolf Hitler's execution and murder of 6 million Jews. Okay? Jewish organizations, hop to it. You know the phone number. You know how to get in touch with CNN. Do it, or you're all hypocrites.
We never really say what we're fighting for. It's easy to pretend we're defending our native soil. Put it in the headlines. I want to see it in big lights. Hello. It's about oil.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. What the war is all about, the occupation, I should say, because it was not a war. Come on. The Polish Navy could have wiped out, no offense to Poland, but, oh, never mind. Jesus, I'm afraid to open my mouth sometimes. It is about the oil. That's all it's about. This is from a couple of weeks ago, Jim Hightower. He writes the following. A bumper sticker about the Iraq war asks, what's our oil doing under their sand? Of course, the Bushites hotly deny that their disastrous war is about grabbing the second largest oil reserve in the world. Donald Rumsfeld barked, has nothing to do with oil, literally nothing to do with oil. Could that be yet another of their lies? Yes. A cabal of kleptocrats, including the Bushites, the Iraqi cabinet, and the major oil corporations, have drafted a new oil law requiring Iraq to open up its fields to control by Western corporations. This was kept secret from both the Iraqi and the American people, but the draft has now been submitted to their parliament for its approval, so details of the thievery have leaked out. The law would transform Iraq's huge oil reserve from a nationally owned resource to a privatization model, opening two-thirds of the known oil fields to foreign control. Instead of Parliament making the major decisions over oil, an unelected authority called the Federal Oil and Gas Council would take charge. And guess who would have seats on this council? The major oil corporations. This autocratic group would then decide who gets the contracts to extract the nation's oil. Yes, that means big oil would be approving its own bids. Also, the corporations would not have to hire Iraqis, would not have to reinvest profits in Iraq, would not have to share new technologies. Foreign interests would even be allowed to divvy up the territory now and hold their pieces of the action until after the current civil war settles down, then move in to grab the profits. This scheme is nothing but a license for big oil to plunder a nation and its people. So much for Bush and company's rhetoric about bringing democracy to Iraq. They're using our troops to give away Iraq's oil and its sovereignty. Jim Hightower. Now, this is from Oil Change International. Oil Change International is supporting Iraq's oil unions and other Iraqis who oppose the current version of the oil law. We strongly oppose efforts by the Bush administration and some members of Congress to make passage of this law a benchmark for performance of the Iraqi government. Our reasons for concern are as follows. First of all, a few key facts about the Iraqi oil law. Iraq has 115 billion barrels of known oil reserves, 10% of the world total. There are 80 discovered oil fields, of which only 17 have been developed. Oil accounts for more than 70% of Iraq's gross domestic product and 95% of government revenue. The proposed Iraq hydrocarbon law would take the majority of Iraq's oil out of the exclusive hands of the Iraqi government and open it to international oil companies for a generation or more. Foreign oil companies will have a stake in Iraq's vast oil wealth for the first time since 1972, when Iraq nationalized the oil industry. The process of drafting the oil law has been particularly troubling, the timeline of which entities have seen the draft suggests that Iraqi interests are not being considered first and foremost. The draft shown to U.S. government and major oil companies was in July of 06. The draft shown to the International Monetary Fund, September 06. The draft shown to the Iraqi parliament, February 07. God. The Iraq National Oil Company would have exclusive control of just 17 of Iraq's known 80 oil fields, leaving two-thirds of known and all of its yet undiscovered reserves open to foreign control. The law sets no minimum standard for the extent to which foreign companies would have to invest their earnings in the Iraqi economy, partner with Iraqi companies, hire Iraqi workers, or share new technologies. The international oil companies could also be offered some of the most corporate-friendly contracts in the world, including what are called production-sharing agreements. These agreements are the oil industry's preferred model, but are roundly rejected by all the top oil-producing countries in the Middle East because they grant long-term contracts, 20 to 30 years, and greater control, ownership, and profits to the companies than to other models. In fact, they are used for only approximately 12% of the world's oil. Iraq's neighbors, Iran, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia, maintain nationalized oil systems and have outlawed foreign control over oil development. They all hire international oil companies as contractors to provide specific services as needed for a limited duration and without giving the foreign company any direct interest in the oil produced. Iraqis may very well choose to use the expertise and experience of international oil companies. They are most likely to do so in a manner that best serves their own needs if they are freed from the tremendous external pressure being exercised by the Bush administration and the oil corporations and the presence of 140,000 members of the American military. Finally, it's worth noting that Bering Point, a Virginia-based contractor, is being paid $240 million for its work in Iraq, winning an initial contract from the U.S. Agency for International Development within weeks of the fall of Saddam Hussein in 2003. A Bering Point employee based in the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad was hired to advise the Iraqi Ministry of Oil on drawing up a new hydrocarbon law within weeks of the fall of Saddam Hussein. Bering Point employees gave $117,000
to the Bush election campaigns more than any other Iraq contractor. Now, you know, and I know, and we have known, that this murderous assault against Iraq under Bush 2 has had nothing to do with freedom and democracy. Our allies in the Middle East, Kuwait, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia, are either kingdoms, and Egypt, are either kingdoms or dictatorships. There is no democracy in the Middle East among the Arab countries. None. Now you might say, well, what about the Palestinians? Right. They are attempting to have democracy. But every time they try, the United States and the Israelis say, we don't like who you chose as your leader. You're out of here. Go back. Try again. But our oil-producing, Arab-speaking allies in the Middle East would no more allow democracy than they would cut their own throats. But here the Bush crime family is wanting and has spent 4 years trying to convince you and me that they're all about democracy in the Middle East. Of course, it's changed now. That was the fifth or ninth reason that we were murdering people in Iraq. The most recent reason we're doing it is to ensure, what did they say today, an acceptable level of violence exists in Iraq. Because after all, America has areas where there's violence too. So the new goal, the reason our soldiers and Marines are there, according to Bush, is to tamp down to an acceptable level, the violence and killing that's going on in that sad country daily. But the real reason is this oil law. And this is one of the benchmarks. This is one of the reasons the Iraqi parliament has adjourned for the next, how long, Kathy? 1 month? 2 months? How long? So they don't have to sit there like quislings and sign off the only asset, the only natural resource they have, their oil. And the American and British and French and whoever else, oil companies, are sitting there like vultures, waiting. So when these people in the Bush crime family tell you that it's not about the oil, I don't know. I wish... No, I can't say that on the air. It's just stupefyingly incredible. Bush and his cronies are willing to murder tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people for the greed and the power and the money and the oil and the control. Your appetite for destruction. It's almost more than I can handle, frankly.
Or have you abandoned them? From civilians to enemies, bombs can't discern. They just destroy all in their path. Will we ever learn? How many Iraqis per gallon? On this endless killing spree, how many kids can you kill? Send the lower class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice.
Prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 9 before the hour. The one of the things that the Decider, or is he, he's the commander guy now, one of the things the Decider commander guy keeps saying is that, there's going to be no timetable. You can't put a timetable on the big, old, powerful, flight-suited commander-in-chief because, you know, he's got a war to run, and the commanders on the ground have a war to run, and by golly, you know, putting a timetable on everything, it would just signal to the enemy surrender day, right? It just give them surrender date. No. I'm the commander guy, and I don't do that. you just can't do that. You can't let the enemy know, and you know, a timetable. And these Democrats in Congress who are putting a timeline on. No. I'm not going to do that because you can't make a commander do that, and I am the commander guy. He ignored the will of the American people and vetoed the bill that did set a timetable for ending our military involvement in this occupation, Iraq civil war, and the fact that we have murdered an entire country. And Bush and his crime members, his crime family members, have attacked people in and out of government who are proposing a timeline, saying they're, you know, undermining U.S. generals and you know, legislating defeat, and that's not going to happen. Here's some of his quotes. I believe artificial timetables of withdrawal would be a mistake. I would strongly reject an artificial timetable withdrawal and or Washington politicians trying to tell those who wear the uniform how to do their job. Here's another one. The attempt to micromanage our commanders is an unwise and perilous endeavor. It is impossible to argue that an unconditional timetable for retreat could serve the security interests of the United States or our friends in the region. That was Cheney. First one was Bush. Here's Dana Perino. Too much cappuccino Perino. He's also in denial that a surrender date he thinks is a good idea. It's not a good idea. It is defeat. It's a death sentence for the millions of Iraqis who voted for a constitution, who voted for a government, who voted for a free and democratic society. Ooh, now all that was within the past 2 weeks. As Think Progress points out, flashback to 1999, when George W. Bush was governor of Texas. Then Bush criticized President Clinton for not setting, that's right, a timetable for getting out of Kosovo. April 9th, 1999. Victory means exit strategy, and it's important for the president to explain to us what the exit strategy is. And on a specific need for a timetable, June 5th, 1999. I think it's also important for the president to lay out a timetable as to how long they will be involved and when they will be withdrawn. This is from thinkprogress.org. So despite his past statements, Bush now refuses to apply the same standard to his war and smears those who want a similar timetable for Iraq. Well, of course. But George W. Bush is a cowardly, incompetent thug, and a hypocrite, and a jackass who uses on his own, if it's not scripted, he uses the syntax, vernacular, and vocabulary of an elementary school child. No withdrawal date for you. The National Review Online, if you read this, then you are transmitting to me that your brain is already like jello. But it features, this also is from Think Progress, it features an exclusive interview with a right-wing nut of the highest order, Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Robert Buzz Patterson, who is a right-wing radio talk show host. He accuses, quote, Democrat politicians, Democrat, you punk, big media, academia, popular culture, and non-government organizations of forming a fifth column that is facilitating defeat against Islamofascism, end quote. Now, this thug is the author of an upcoming book with the title War Crimes, The Left's Campaign to Destroy Our Military and Lose the War on Terror. In the interview and in his book, Buzz Patterson isn't afraid to accuse people he disagrees with of treason. Now, I do that too, but of course, mine is fact-based, and his is based in how he contemplates his hiney hole, I guess. The interviewer said, "Your upcoming book begins with a quote from Cicero about how a nation, quote, cannot survive treason from within, end quote. Surely you're not calling Democrats traitors, or are you?" Buzz Patterson,
"I am. They certainly aren't. Their behavior during our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan is held up to the light of the U.S. Constitution. Article 3, Section 3 defines treason against the United States as, quote, adhering to our enemies, giving them aid and comfort, end quote. Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, Dick Durbin, and John Murtha, among others, are guilty of exactly that. And it's not just the Democrats. Many on the left. It's faculties and administrations on college campuses, big media, Hollywood, and left-wing organizations such as the Ford Foundation, MoveOn.org, United for Peace and Justice. What is particularly disturbing to me is that these Americans are doing it while their fellow citizens are fighting and dying in combat. The best ally that Al-Qaeda has these days is the Democrat Party leadership. It's reprehensible." End quote. Well, my fellow treasonous traitors, you know, accusations of this is what these punk asses use against critics of their filthy occupation. Boy, I'd like to meet Buzz. Oh, I'd like to meet Buzz. I would like to meet somebody who calls me, either directly or indirectly, a traitor or guilty of treason. I would love to have about 5 minutes in private with Buzz or anybody else who would call me a traitor or treasonous in my own country. It's almost, thinking about that is almost like anticipating good sex. Not that there's bad sex. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Email from Elaine in Helsinki, Finland. He writes, "Dear Mike, I know this Friday will be kids' night. I look forward to hearing what Matthew has to say, for example. But what about us expatriates who live overseas? May I kindly suggest that you consider an international night? I usually listen to your programs via podcasts. I'm a NovaM founder. I would have to get up at 4 a.m. to listen to your program. I live in Helsinki, Finland, and right now we are in, I guess it's called civil twilight. It's like we divide, we're in Eastern Daylight Time here on the East Coast. We are now in civil twilight. The sun officially rises at 5:13 a.m. P.S. How can you live in Georgia? An international night. That would be fun, wouldn't it? But it scares me about the phone bills.
Well, one of the problems, I think, is that when you're dealing with that many time zones and listeners all around the world, I mean, my God, you'd have to have people calling in it. You know, we have listeners in, where's that island? That
Malta.
Guy? Malta. What time is it in Malta?
Our Aussie listeners could handle it down in the land of Oz. They could handle it real well. It's tomorrow, daylight, afternoon. All right, very quickly here. On the April 3rd, this is from MediaMatters.org. On the April 30 edition of his nationally syndicated radio show, Glenn Beck likened former Vice President Al Gore's fight against global warming to Adolf Hitler's use of eugenics as justification for exterminating 6 million European Jews. Beck stated, "Now Al Gore is not going to be rounding up Jews and exterminating them. It is the same tactic, however. The goal is different. The goal is globalization. The goal is global carbon tax. The goal is United Nations running the world. That is the goal. Back in the 1930s, the goal was to get rid of all the Jews and have one global government. CNN Headlines puts this kind of, anyway, he goes on. You got to have an enemy to fight. And when you have an enemy to fight, then you can unite the entire world. You can unite them behind you and you seize power. That was Hitler's plan. His enemy, the Jew. Al Gore's enemy, the UN's enemy, global warming. He goes on. Then you get the scientists. Eugenics. You get the scientists. Global warming. Then you have to discredit the scientists who say that's not right. And you must silence all dissenting voices. That's what Hitler did. This son of a bitch is out of control. Who is this piglet? My God. All right, to the Anti-Defamation League and certainly the militant arm of AIPAC and to the Southern Poverty Law Center, which I'm sure they will come through on this, and to any other organization that monitors the trivialization of the deaths of 6 million Jews, here's your next target. And I'm serious about this. Glenn Beck and CNN Headline News. He is likening Al Gore's report on global warming to Hitler's rounding up and executing 6 million human beings. Even if you're not Jewish, do you want to send an email to CNN Headline News and tell them that you've had enough of this son of a bitch? Can you imagine this? Later in this broadcast of April 30th, according to Media Matters, Beck plugged his CNN Headline News special criticizing those who urge action on global warming titled Exposed, Climate of Fear. Beck said of the program, quote, "There's no balance to my special. I want you to know right up front, I'm not saying that this is the end-all truth. I am saying that this is the credible other side. It's what scientists used to hold up and say, this is what we do. It's what colleges and universities used to hold up and say, diversity of thought. But it doesn't happen anymore. And before it's completely shut down, and before we're all sent to respect camps, make sure you watch it on Wednesday." Oh, my God. God, I'd like to have 10 minutes alone with this guy, too. Beck further claimed that Al Gore is using misinformation to mobilize support for action on global warming. Beck says, quote, "They're telling us things in Al Gore's global warming special that are not true, that the seas will rise 20 feet. Even the UN says that's not true. But you got to have the fear. We're all going to die." In fact, as Media Matters for America documented, a report released in February by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a body of the United Nations, supported an assertion regarding sea levels in Gore's book, An Inconvenient Truth. In the book, Gore wrote that if the West Antarctic ice shelf melted or slipped off its island mooring into the sea, it would raise sea levels worldwide by 20 feet. He added that the West Antarctic ice shelf is virtually identical in size and mass to the Greenland ice dome, which would also raise sea levels worldwide by 20 feet if it melted or broke up and slipped into the sea. The UN's IPCC noted that contraction of the Greenland ice sheet is projected to continue to contribute to sea level rise after 2100, and that if a negative surface mass balance were sustained for millennia, that would lead to virtual complete elimination of the Greenland ice shelf and a resulting contribution to sea level rise of about 7 meters, which is equivalent to approximately 23 feet. Glenn Beck says Al Gore is using the same tactic in his fight against global warming as Hitler did against the Jews. Oh, my God. Well, I know that before the sun rises tomorrow, there will be an abundance of emails and letters of protest from and righteous protest. I mean, you don't do this. I may have problems with the government of Israel on many occasions, but you do not trivialize the systematic murder, execution of 6 million men, women, and children, and the further execution and murder of another 4 million gypsies, gays, Democrats, Catholics, liberals, and communists. But 6 million people were executed because of their religious belief. And this filthy, filthy rat bastard, Glenn Beck, trivializes every one of those deaths in his comparison to Al Gore's film. This is an outrage. This is an outrage. Who's going to do something about this, huh? Who is going to do something about this? Which Jewish organization is going to come down on CNN like a thunderclap? Which one? Which five? Why not every single one of them? Every time an alleged slight or possible slur against Catholics occurs in this country, what's this guy's name, head of the Catholic League in New York, Donahue or whatever his name is, he goes absolutely ballistic, and he gets lots of press. This is 1,000 times worse than that. In fact, it's 6 million times worse than that. Somebody needs to sit this rat bastard Glenn Beck down and slowly and carefully explain to him what the execution, gassing, burning, murder of 6 million men, women, children, and babies, what that means. It does not mean the same as Al Gore's attempt to wake us up about global warming. Glenn Beck, you are a pig.
I don't want to see your face at my door, and I'll never leave like you. That's for sure. I don't want to live like you anymore, anymore.
It's about 21 past the hour from BJ. Hi, Mike. There's thousands of freaks like Beck out there. It's CNN giving him a platform that is the crime. Yeah, I don't completely get it, but oh well. I thought about even mentioning this tonight, but what the hell? This is about Joan Baez being banned at Walter Reed. Now, I've heard a couple of takes on this, and this AP report seems to consolidate the different takes on it. It starts out by saying that Joan Baez says she doesn't know why she was not allowed to perform for recovering soldiers at Walter Reed as she planned. In a letter to the Washington Post published today, she said rocker John Mellencamp had asked her to perform with them last Friday and that she accepted his invitation. She wrote, quote, "I've always been an advocate for nonviolence, and I have stood as firmly against the Iraq War as I did against the Vietnam War 40 years ago. I realize now that I might have contributed to a better welcome home for those soldiers fresh from Vietnam. Maybe that's why I didn't hesitate to accept the invitation to sing for those returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. In the end, 4 days before the concert, I was not, quote, approved, end quote, by the Army to take part Strange irony, end quote. Baez said she was not told why she was left off the program by the Army. She told the Washington Post, quote, there might have been one, there might have been 50 soldiers that thought I was a traitor, end quote. The reports, the Post reported that Walter Reed officials did not respond to requests for comments yesterday, but that an email statement published Monday at RollingStone.com, the Walter Reed spokesman Steve Sanderson said the medical center received the request for participation by Baez just 2 days before the concert. Sanderson told Rolling Stone website, quote, those additional requirements were not in the agreement or the contract and would have required a modification, end quote. Oh, give me a goddamn break. How many concerts have I produced, Kathy? You add people whenever you want to. Joan Baez plays acoustic guitar. I'm sure John Mellencamp would have loved to have her just come out on stage and sing with him. Sanderson, you're out of your freaking mind. Anyway, Baez's manager, Mark Spector, told the Post that Mellencamp's manager invited Baez to perform in March and handle all the arrangements. The Post said Mellencamp's manager did not return calls requesting comment, and that Mellencamp's publicist said the singer was ill Tuesday, unavailable, blah, 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 blah. But Mellencamp earlier told RollingStone.com, quote, they didn't give me a reason why she couldn't come. We asked why, and they said, she can't fit here, period, end quote. Oh, well. Into the oval file with that one. All right, we're getting close to phone calls here. Just a couple more. I saw the videos today. Did you see the videos of what happened at the pro-immigration? I don't know what you want to call it. Call it anything you want to. The demonstrations in L.A. There were demonstrations all over the country, but in L.A. the other day, according to the L.A. Times or the Associated Press, the demonstration in L.A., which a year ago brought about 650,000 people in the streets, yesterday brought about 25 to 50,000 people. But if you saw the video that's out there now, it was on ABC. As a matter of fact, ABC, I think ABC led with it tonight. Or was it NBC? I don't know. But it was an obvious police riot, not on the scale of what happened in Chicago in 1968. But it really is upsetting, isn't it, to see people carrying the American flag and pushing a stroller with a baby in it being clubbed by Los Angeles police officers. Isn't that a bit upsetting to you? It is to me. Or L.A. police officers firing sponge bullets or rubber bullets, whatever these things are, and don't let the word sponge or rubber fool you. They put hideous marks and injuries on your body, and if it hits you in the wrong place, your genitals, certain part of your throat, your eye, your neck, they can kill you. But to see these riot-clad Gestapo sons of bitches in L.A., I can't stand militarized police. I can't. These people weren't doing anything. They were in MacArthur Park, and they got off the sidewalk. I believe in orderly, legal immigration into this country. I really do. My grandparents did it. I think everybody should do it who wants to come here. I really do. But I'm not Lou Dobbs, and I'm not the Klan, and I'm not these psyched-out, sick militia types, and I'm not the L.A. police. You don't beat people up and have them say, I love you. You can't do it. But if you saw the video, you know what I'm talking about, right? Maybe that's why they didn't let Joan Baez sing today. Isn't she Latina?
Calves are easily bound and slaughtered, never knowing the reason why. But whoever treasures freedom like the swallow.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio?
Make Mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
26 before the hour. Okay. Who sent this to me? Mark? The ADL has responded. The Anti-Defamation League says Glenn Beck's outrageous Holocaust comparison is part of a troubling epidemic on the airwaves. This was released today. Excuse me. The ADL today denounced remarks by radio personality Glenn Beck, where he compared efforts to raise awareness about global warming to Hitler's plans to exterminate Jews during the Holocaust, saying his remarks are part of, quote, a troubling epidemic on the airwaves where comparisons to Hitler and the Holocaust are becoming all too facile, end quote. And then it quotes what Beck said that I just shared with you. Abraham Foxman, ADL National Director and Holocaust survivor, issued the following statement. Glenn Beck's linkage of Hitler's plan to round up and exterminate Jews with Al Gore's efforts to raise awareness of global warming is outrageous, insensitive, and deeply offensive. Unfortunately, his remarks are just the latest example of a troubling epidemic on the airwaves where comparisons to Hitler and the Holocaust are becoming all too facile. It has become almost commonplace for talk show pundits to use comparisons to the Holocaust and Nazi imagery to attack people whose views they disagree with, whether the issue is global warming or immigration, as we witnessed when CNN's Lou Dobbs recently suggested on his program that immigrant rights groups use tactics similar to those of Nazi propagandists. The 6 million Jewish victims and millions of other victims of Hitler deserve a measure of respect. Their deaths should not be used for political points or sloganeering. Every time a radio or television personality takes that unique event in history and twists it for their own political agenda, it cheapens the public debate and distorts and trivializes the Holocaust, end quote. I have referred to members of the Bush crime family as being Nazis. And I think in the times I've done that, I've made a clear distinction and made no comparison to the Holocaust. I'm talking about the invasion of Iraq was like the invasion of Poland or the invasion of Czechoslovakia or the invasion of the Anschluss, the invasion of Austria. I don't think I would ever make a comparison between the Bush crime family and the extermination of 6 million people and the subsequent death of 50 million on this planet as a result of Hitler, Mussolini, and Hirohito. Regarding commenting on and refusing to allow Glenn Beck's trivialization to go unchecked or unchallenged, Joanne in San Francisco wrote, I hope a group like the Simon Wiesenthal Center says something, but we have to be careful. Perhaps Al Gore will say something. If you don't choose your fights, everyone accuses you of whining all the time. As the events recede, people don't know. It's ancient history, and it seems irrelevant. Then it sounds more like whining and works against us. It's a fine line, and I don't know where to draw it. Oh, yeah, I guess that's the case. While we're speaking of things Jewish, how about the State of Israel? Good editorial in today's New York Times, and I was going to mention this last night also and just didn't get around to doing it. Ehud Olmert, their prime minister, is really under fire right now for, among other things, in the first place, he claims to be a center-right leader. I think the emphasis is on right and not center. But the conduct of the war in Lebanon last summer has it freaked out the Israelis and caused a commission to be formed. Well, just listen to this. Israel's government badly botched the war in Lebanon last summer, but you have to admire the work of the investigating commission that same government appointed to analyze what had gone wrong. In its initial report, the commission pointed to, quote, severe failures of judgment, responsibility, and prudence on the part of Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. The commission found that Mr. Olmert was too hasty in deciding to go to war, that he proceeded without a detailed military plan, that his goals were unrealistic, and that he failed to consult beyond an inner military circle of true believers. That should sound more than a little familiar to Americans. Now, I'm not commenting at this point on the provocations on either side that resulted in the bombing of Lebanon. But what is interesting is the fact that the Israelis don't screw around where, you know, when they feel that their government has done something wrong. I don't care who the government is. Of course, they have a parliamentary system, so it's easier to get rid of the psychopaths there than to get rid of the psychopaths here. The Times went on to say, initially, Israelis applauded Mr. Olmert's decision to conduct sustained airstrikes in Lebanon. They saw it as a firm and justified response to provocative cross-border Hezbollah raids and rocket attacks. But when 34 days of destructive warfare ended with Hezbollah's military capacities largely intact, its political standing enhanced, and much of the world blaming Israel for the damage inflicted on Lebanese civilians, opinion turned sharply against Mr. Olmert, Defense Minister Amir Peretz, and the top Israeli military leadership. The panel did not explicitly call on Mr. Olmert to resign, but its findings leave him gravely weakened. And there's more of it. And there have been several articles, aside from a New York Times editorial, written about this investigation and about how the Israeli people, other parties in the Israeli government other than Likud or some of the right-wing, center-right, right-wing, whatever you want to call them. I realize Olmert is not part of, I think I'm right here, he's not Likud. That is Sharon and Netanyahu and people like that. But the fact that the Israelis, when they feel something was screwed up, they demand and get an investigation with no crap. Now, again, I'm not defending or criticizing any particular, not in this instance. I mean, I went nuts over that invasion of Lebanon. So I've already stated my piece about that. And I'm not going to revisit it. What I'm talking about here, though, is the fact that the Israelis have the courage to investigate their leadership in a way that demands accountability and not this crappy American little thing of, well, I take full responsibility, but I'm, you know, yawn, so what else is new? Not that. That's not how the Israelis operate. That's probably one of the reasons that I get so furious. I would love to be a total supporter of the state of Israel. I really would. I really would. Except for the fact that I can't because I understand the history too much. Oh, God, don't start. Don't start. Don't start. Don't do it, Malloy. Get out of that discussion quick. Run, run. I'm gone. Now, right before the break, I was talking about those immigration rallies. That occurred yesterday, May Day. My God. In MacArthur Park, downtown L.A., police riot started about 6 p.m. when police, according to L.A. Times, tried to disperse demonstrators who had moved off the sidewalk into the street. One of the rally's organizers said police started moving in and forcing the people out of the park, people with children, people pushing strollers. The chief of police there, William Bratton, said, quote, certain elements of the crowd, end quote, started the disturbance, but the, quote, vast, vast majority of the people who were here were behaving appropriately, end quote. And it goes on. The mayor, Latino, Antonio Villaraigosa, who was traveling in El Salvador during a trade mission, said the incident was, quote, a most unfortunate end to a peaceful day, end quote. The immigration situation is really, it's bringing out, I think, in Americans, in citizens here, the best and the worst. I really do. I have such mixed feelings about so-called illegal immigrants. I really do. And if you want to look to perhaps part of the cause of this horrendous influx of people, I say horrendous in terms of numbers, look to George Bush 1 and Bill Clinton. Look to NAFTA. NAFTA did this. It pretty much destroyed the economy of Mexico, destroyed Mexican farms, destroyed the price of basic commodities in Mexico, and made it impossible for people to make a living in that country. And we've gotten to the point now where, you know, the corporations don't give a goddamn where people go or what they do or how many kids die in the process or whether or not they cross borders. It's happening all over the globe. It's not just here. Any country where you see exploitation by these transnational corporations, you see a massive flux amongst the population, people going where the jobs are. They happen to be in the northern hemisphere, the southern hemisphere. That's where most of the immigration is coming from. It's coming from South Asia. It's coming from the Middle East. It's coming from South and Central America, from Mexico. Not South America so much, but Mexico and Central America. This situation was to a great degree created by us. And by us, I mean corporate America. They and the Clinton administration and Bush 1. They created, and Reagan. This was created. And so now we sit back and say, well, let's go gas some of these little babies in strollers. Let's see if we can hit them with bullets because their parents have them out for a demonstration.
Go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
Yeah, that's easy for you to say.
Let Mike Malloy do it for you. Let his heart get all clotted up with huge, pulsing purple clots. Deep vein thrombotic whatever. All right, let's do some phone calls here. Len is calling from New York City. He's been holding on forever. Len, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I miss you on the radio here.
Yeah, I'd love to be on in New York. You never know.
You know, I've been listening to radio now for a couple of years. I got you almost first. And, you know, I've been listening to right-wing radio, too, just to see what they're saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm disturbed. You know, I was listening to a number of left-wing stations, too, and when you talk about the war in Iraq, it appears that nobody still feels like the Democrats have a plan to, you know, how to clean this mess up as best as they might be able to, except for Joe Biden. And I don't know why people aren't bringing, you know, his intentions up. Are you familiar with what his plan would be?
No, I have to say I'm not. I think
you see, there you go, and you're a very well informed guy.
Well, I guess I have to let you know my bias is against Joe Biden. I think Biden is a blowhard, a windbag, and a phony, and I don't like most of his votes in the Senate. The guy just turns me completely off. I don't think he's sincere. I think he's an opportunist. Have I left anything out?
Well, you're talking about almost every politician I've ever heard.
Well, no, but there's some who are not
there
that
are
way.
A few.
And if that's the case, then why should I pay any attention to what, you know, what he says now? I think there are members of the House and the Senate. Dennis Kucinich has a good plan. I think John Murtha has a plan.
Can you tell me what Dennis Kucinich's plan is?
I can't give it to you detail of a sentence and clause, but Kucinich's plan is based on the idea that the war was illegal and unlawful, if such a thing as a legal and lawful war exists, and should be brought home now, that money should be appropriated, and there's enough money in the pipeline right now to begin an immediate withdrawal and get the hell out of a place where we have no business being. I think anyone with any I want to say common sense, but it's greater than that, a moral sense, would say the same thing. Get out
well,
now.
I guess I would agree, except for the fact that we've screwed up things there as bad as we have, that we've gone, you know, I feel that the moral obligation is to try and help them, you know, at least in the respect that not to sit there and occupy the country, but at least to be able to pull back and help them try. I mean, Biden's plan is basically...
Well, you know, the best way, but wait a minute, the best way to help the Iraqis, I don't know if you were listening earlier tonight when I read what the Iraqi parliament is supposed to turn into law, where they give away 85% of their natural resource, oil, in order to satisfy Bush and the international oil cartel. I'm sorry, not the international oil cartel, the oil companies. If we really wanted to help Iraq in the first place, we would not have imposed sanctions on them for the past 13 years before we invaded and started killing their civilians again. And we would leave their oil alone. It's theirs. It's not ours. Yeah,
I agree. But Biden basically is looking at it like this. Look, you know, obviously there's going to be fighting there until these guys agree somehow or another to separate. I mean, basically he's pointing out that as long as you're going to have Sunnis and Shias and Kurds trying to be artificially drawn together into a central government that was originally created by drawing lines on a map, they're going to be fighting indefinitely, and that what we should be trying to help them do is decentralize as much as possible. He's not focused on getting control of the oil. He's just focused on getting them to sit down at the table and say, okay, like, guys, you know, we don't want to build the walls for you like Bush has just done. Create, you know, some boundaries for yourselves here. We'll help try and help you out and get the other guys around you, you know, Egypt, Syria, Iran. But he's trying to engage them in a way for them to walk away from the fighting. And nobody seems to be focused on how important that is to try to not just walk away from, you know, like walk away from the region the way we'd all love to be able to do, but to have some responsibility in dealing, helping them deal with the aftermath of the mess that we created.
Well, I'll tell you what, Len, why don't you do this? Send me a link to whatever part of Biden's website or whatever you've got. Send it to me so I can read what his position is on our involvement in Iraq. Right off the top of my head, you know, I can see several things that I would disagree with just in the synopsis that you've offered there. But on the other hand, I've become so negative about any involvement in Iraq and so poisoned in my thinking about what we've done to that country and what we'll continue to do to that country, because it does contain either the second or third or fourth, depending on who you listen to, largest reserve of petroleum on the planet. So I can't help but be cynical about anything regarding our involvement in Iraq other than getting the hell out. We have caused so much incalculable damage, so much death and destruction over the past decade and a half to this poor country. But if you'll send me something, I promise you I'll look at it.
Thanks very much.
Because I'd like to see what Biden's got to say. And you're right. No, I don't know. I don't have a clue what Biden, what his position
is. I mean, he's basically acknowledging our responsibility and trying to help them clean up the mess.
Well, how we do that? I mean, that looks good on paper. I think we all would like that to happen, because of the tremendous moral load we have put on our own backs because of our immorality, and we're all guilty. I'm as guilty of it tonight as George Bush is, and frankly, so are you, because we allowed this to happen.
I know you're hitting a break. See if you get a hold of a copy of last week's Meet Press, where he was interviewed for the whole hour.
All right, well, send me a link, all right?
You bet.
Thanks, Len. Appreciate
your
call.
You're welcome. Take care.
We'll be back after the break. Two Seekers, stay with us. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Okay, listen, you want to leave America with me? I'm half kidding because I'm only talking about for a week here. If you haven't checked it out, go to NovaMRadio.com or MikeMalloy.com. Or hell, for that matter, go to BartCop.com. And BartCop has a link up for us. Bless his heart. Oh, my God, I love that guy. Read up on this Truth Seeker cruise that we're planning for this October. We're going to go to the Mexican Riviera. Kathy and I have never been on a cruise ship before. And we're taking Molly along, too. So this will be interesting. A unique experience for us. You know, we've done just about everything else, but just not a cruise ship. So we're looking forward to it. I just want to see what this is like. I've had a lot of friends who have cruised, and maybe you have. I've cruised, but not like this. Oh, never mind. So we're Kathy and I and Molly are going, and I hope you're going to come. I don't know how many staterooms or balcony suites or whatever are available for this trip, but I think there's 20 or 30 anyway. And the agency that's handling this in Phoenix, because we're ignorant about this sort of stuff, has told us that there's some really good rates here. Now, if you've cruised before, you can go to NovaMRadio.com, and you will know better than I the deal that's being offered here. So you can also upgrade. You can get a balcony stateroom for $10 more than an ocean view cabin. And anything that has to do with cruising that only costs $10 more for an upgrade, I mean, that's got to be a good deal. I mean, I may be cruise ignorant, but I'm not stupid. We we're kind of planning what we're going to do here. It's going to be fun. This is not going to be real structured or you know, we're going to have we're just going to get together and hang out with the folks that go during this trip. We'll have a meet and greet, and we'll have a cocktail party. We'll have a Q&A session. If BartCop comes along, we'll probably have a poker game, you know, and drink some good tequila, and just have a good time. So I'd like to. There's so many of you that I would love to go on a cruise with, and this might be the chance to do it. So what the hell? Go to NovaMRadio.com, click on it, take a look, see what's there. If it's something you want to do, come on, let's do it. Let's get out of here for a while. Let's get out of here for a while. And it's not until what, October what, Kathy? 7th? Okay, so it's off in the distance, but we've got to have our reservations in by when? July 10th? July 1st? My birthday. Oh, okay. So that gives you the month of May and the month of June to you know, decide whether or not you want to do this. And I hope you do, because I think this will be an absolute hoot.
I think that's when all the reservations have to be in, but some of these deals, like that $10 upgrade, that's a real limited kind of space
that's like
available.
Right now.
Yeah, that's like what's available now. I don't know how many of those there are.
Maybe some of the people listening to go on this trip, maybe they have a three-year-old like we do. Bring your kid.
That'd be great.
If you want some more video and audio as to what happened in L.A. yesterday, Shorty just emailed me. You can go to la.indymedia.org and look around. It's there. Shorty writes very quickly, the cops scared the kids with the shotgun sounds, beating elderly people, disabled, poisoning babies. They don't know how many people are in the hospital. Shorty here is very pissed off. I can tell by the way he... And he says that Chief Bratton says that the protesters fired missiles? Shorty's a woman? Oh, okay. I'm sorry, Shorty. I didn't mean to change your gender. Unless you wanted me to. I have no idea. But la.indymedia.org, if you want some more video. The video I saw tonight on the MSM, the corporate media, I was surprised they showed You know, I don't know where corporate America stands on this. I guess corporate America wants as many cheap workers as they can get. I know that's what Bush wants. As many people as that's the core, isn't it? That's the core. It's just, the centerpiece of capitalism, the exploitation of labor. That's why capitalists hate unions, because you know, unions, people organize and they say no, hell no, we're not going to take it anymore. So I'm really perplexed about this issue. This is an issue that has mushroomed while I've been asleep, apparently. Depending on who you listen to, 10 to 15 million so-called illegal aliens in this country, most of whom are from Mexico and Central America, right? Although there are a lot of Irish illegal immigrants. I know a couple. There are Israeli illegal immigrants. There are Middle Eastern illegal immigrants. There are illegal immigrants that I know personally from the UK. But the vast preponderance, the millions and millions, are coming from the South. And they're coming because NAFTA, among other devices, destroyed their economy, destroyed their ability to make a living. And corporate America, whether not just corporate America, but the America that hires people, is willing to wink and nod and look the other way. You know, why hire an American who's going to be just so damn insistent that he or she gets paid, oh, you know, real robber wages, like what, $11 or $12 an hour? Ooh. And have their Social Security matched and maybe even provide a little health insurance. Ooh, can't have that when you can have somebody coming from a smashed, broken economy south of the border who's willing to work for $5 or $6 or $7 an hour, if they get that, and be satisfied with it. But I do know this, this immigration issue, wasn't there just a raid here today or yesterday, a Klan organization that was planning on blowing up or murdering busloads of Mexicans or campers full of Mexicans? You know, I don't know. Like I say, it's an issue that's just kind of slid behind me. I haven't been paying attention. But I know this issue has raised once again immigrant bashing, legal or illegal. It has brought these white punk-ass racists out of the woods again. Here they come again. Here they come again. You know, without the sheets, but now we're all dressed up in camo, gonna go kill us some of these goddamn Mexicans come across over here and taking our work. Ah, you sick punks. I don't know where I stand on the immigration issue. I'd like it to see it be done legally and orderly and properly and with respect for the human beings that are forced to cross a border, a national border, and leave their town or their city or their village or their farm, whatever, just to be able to take care of their families. I'd like to see it done normally, and by that I mean in a normative way, legally, peacefully, orderly, politely, with respect for the human life involved. I know I feel that. I'm certainly not unclear about that. But the issue that I'm very clear about is the fact that once again, and these right-wing racist sons of bitches just lay in the muck waiting for an issue like this. These are the kind of people that Glenn Beck appeals to. And the pig man. So the Klansmen and the racists and the militia types and the haters just you know, they wait in the weeds for an issue like this so they can pop up and talk about how, well, we got to save the white race. Let me tell you something. The white race on this planet is in a vast minority right now. And unless unless white folks come to terms with that and start treating the rest of the world with a little bit, just a smidgen more dignity and respect than the white race has treated other races over the past, oh, I don't know, 5,000 years, there's an awful day coming. You know what I'm saying? An awful day coming. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Now, by the way, I'm white.
From the moment you wake and leave the house in the morning, the terrorists or Democrats strike without warning. So to your back seat in bed, wear a bucket on your head. That's what I said. And to show your support for right-wing ideology, the raids on Iraq and the rape of the ecology, while the treasury's being bled. Keep a bucket on your head.
Keep a what? A bucket.
Holes,
21 past the hour. Two quick emails here, then back to your calls. Both are slugged Biden's plan, which is interesting. The first one here is from Mary in Denver. Dear Mike, it is not up to Joe Biden, Dennis Kucinich, Richard Pearl, ExxonMobil, the Heritage Foundation, the New York Times, or anyone other than the sovereign nation of Iraq to propose a post-war plan for the sovereign nation of Iraq. I am disgusted, Mary writes, by all the pretentious, condescending advice offered from this side of the abyss. Even top Democrats, with their ridiculous benchmarks, strike the pose of the scolding schoolmarm toward the Iraqis. Now, you kids, behave yourselves or else! They tell them to stand up and solve their problems while we strafe and bomb and kick down their doors. The only strategy is to clear out immediately. If they ask us for help, just send money. Mountains and mountains of money. Oh, and an apology might also be in order. Mary in Denver. Reg at TVNewsLies.org writes, Mike, Biden's great plan is an old one, designed to establish three mini-states, Kurds in the north, Sunnis in the center, Shiites in the south, under a loose confederation in which each group would be relatively autonomous and ultimately share the oil revenues equally. Yeah, right. This is not a new plan and totally ignores the most dangerous element, that of allowing a Kurdish state to become a magnet for Turkish Kurds, and would undoubtedly spark an invasion by Turkey. It also was a long-term dream of the Israelis. In 1982, Oded Yenon, an official from the Israeli Foreign Affairs Office, wrote, quote, to dissolve Iraq is even more important for us than dissolving Syria. In the short term, it's Iraqi power that constitutes the greatest threat to Israel. The Iraq-Iran war tore Iraq apart and provoked its downfall. All manner of inter-Arab conflict help us and accelerate our goal of breaking up Iraq into small, diverse pieces, end quote. Biden also has no clue, Reg writes, that intermarriage between different Muslim sects was a common occurrence in Iraq, where, until our invasion, these people lived together in diverse neighborhoods with no serious problems. Dividing the country would unquestionably involve dividing families and tribes and just would not work. When will the Bidens of this nation understand that it is not our right to decide what kind of country Iraq evolves into? It is the premise of the Iraqis themselves to determine their own fate. But then again, how would we keep the oil? Reg. Which says essentially what Marion in Denver wrote. And that's true. The arrogance of the United States or anybody who goes into a country, smashes the living hell out of it, breaks it into a million pieces, murders its population, salts its territory with weapons of depleted uranium that are going to be poisoning the population for the next 10, 15, 30, 50 generations or until global warming wipes out anything anyway. And all this after placing sanctions on the country for 13 years that effectively destroyed that element of the society, the middle class, that might have been able to rise up and get rid of Saddam on its own. And why? We all know why. Is there anyone out there? Yes, there are. There are millions of Americans who are still so goddamn deluded. And I realize that's the third time I've said the GD word tonight, and I apologize, but it just makes me furious that there are Americans, millions of Americans, who still do not, cannot, or refuse to accept the idea that it is about the oil. Damn it, that's all it's ever been about. The oil. And the oil companies are driving this. And may they all rot in hell. It is about the oil. It is only about the oil. It's not even about, as a lot of us have batted around, at least the primary motive, is not about further security for the state of Israel. It is not. It is about the oil. There is a Christian fundamentalist sect that dictates so much of U.S. foreign policy and that Christian fundamentalist sect, when the time comes, will cut the throats of every single Jew on earth in order to satisfy their twisted concept of their Armageddon and their revelation and their rapture and all this other bat squeeze. And that's another thing I really fault the Israelis about, for forming this alliance with these demons from the Christian right, who surely the Israelis understand what the Christians are about. And I will always maintain that of the two, the bigger enemy of the Jews is the Christian.
Stop this madness. Stop the killing. Stop the suffering and the pain. So I don't want to be a soldier. I don't want to kill and maim. Another mother's son or daughter,
son or daughter.
George Bush's war.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk, and you talk that
talk. And your day's screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
26 before the hour. I have a question for you. You don't have to answer it, but maybe you think about it. Send me an email at some point. Don Imus is fired and really raked across the coals for his statement about nappy-headed hoes. And you can make, and I can make, strong, legitimate arguments why he should have been fired. You know, enough is enough. Glenn Beck can also go on television and disrespect and trivialize the death of 6 million Jews by comparing Al Gore's efforts to alert us all to global warming to the efforts of Hitler's annihilation of as many Jews in Europe as he could. And nothing happens? Is that right? You know, I was thinking about this during the break. Not to defend Imus, not at all. I think this arrogant son of a bitch got what he deserved. I mean, they're just, you don't pick on people that can't fight back. Guys like Imus think they can until those people who can't fight back, fight back. And then all of a sudden, whoops, crocodile tears for Don Imus. Too bad, buddy. You play with fire, eventually you get burned. But Glenn Beck insulting 10 basketball players in the manner that Imus did is an outrage. Trivializing the death of 6 million people as Glenn Beck did doesn't have a word. It's so far beyond outrage as to render me, of all people, damn near speechless. And the more I think about this, I didn't know about this until somebody sent this to me. And then somebody sent me Abraham Foxman's response. What is CNN headlines going to do? Huh? What did MSNBC do? What did CBS Radio do? Nothing. Until the advertiser said, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I know. MSNBC gave him a 2-week suspension. So how much longer is the Holocaust denier and anti-Semite Glenn Beck going to be pumping into his low IQ audience the fact that the death of 6 million people was really not a big deal. As a matter of fact, it's about the same as Al Gore trying to scare us about water coming up and lapping our front door our front porches. If Glenn Beck is still on CNN Headline News 2 weeks from now, a week from now, then people who follow media in this country, who sit back and say, wait a second, this is not fair. This is not right in light of Don Imus. And here's Glenn Beck. If Glenn Beck is still on the air a week from now, it means there is a wink, wink, nod, nudge, nudge attitude at CNN Headline News that it's okay to trivialize the death of 6 million people. That's okay. Go, Glenn. Go, baby. They're just goddamn Jews. What difference does it make? Go, Glenn! Isn't that what it says? Yes, it is what it says. So let's see what happens, okay? Let's all just, get a big bowl of popcorn, get a front row seat, and let's sit back and watch what happens to Glenn Beck, especially in light of what happened to Don Imus. 10 basketball players, 6 million Jews. You tell me, huh? You tell me. God, I hate these people. I hate them because they make me physically sick. The Limbaughs and Hannitys and Glenn Becks and Savages and Michael Wiener Savage and all these people who make money and gain their fame smashing the souls and hearts and minds and dreams and ideas of other people simply because they can, because it's sport. And God damn the corporate America media companies that allow this to happen. Damn them all to hell. I mean, really? Huh? Don't you think? And it goes on every day. And it won't stop. And, okay, I can throw my little hissy fit and ADL can go, whoops, no. And you know what'll happen? Nothing. Unless enough people respond to Glenn Beck's trivialization and just denial of the horror of what happened in Poland and Czechoslovakia and Germany and every other invaded country where a death camp was set up by the Nazi killers. So what do you think will happen, Truth Seeker? Huh? What do you think will happen? Back to your phone calls. We have these long breaks, and I sit here and I think about this guy, and I just, you know, I get kind of sick. R.W. is calling from Chattanooga. Hey, R.W., I haven't heard from you for a while. Welcome to the program.
Don't you just want to go up and pinch Glenn Beck's cheeks till he bleeds?
Well, I could use something other than my fingers to make him bleed, that's for sure.
I mean, this is a man who referred to a problem. Now, understand, I'm with Molly Ivins when she wrote that article about Hillary Clinton. If she's the nominee, I'm not voting Democrat.
Right, right.
But Glenn Beck turned around and used the B word in describing Hillary Clinton, a prominent candidate. You know, whether you think of her view, she is a prominent candidate, political candidate for president of the United States. And if you're going to go after on her views, don't use the B word. I mean, that's just insane. I mean, he should have been smacked down for that. I just don't understand. Did you see what some of the comments Paul Harvey's made lately?
Paul Harvey, is he still around?
Yeah, I think he's undead, man. I think he's like a lich or a vampire. I don't know. The grinning ghoul. I'm looking at this picture. Think Progress has got a story on him. He compared the women and children killed in Afghanistan to the 9/11 hijackers. says there's no civilians.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And they bring up something he said a couple of years ago about how we should use atomic bombs in Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, that grinning ghoul, you know.
Yeah. I've Paul Harvey has always just kind of freaked me out. Paul Harvey, you know, when I was a kid, when I was a child, R.W., I can remember hearing his voice, and I am older now than 80% of the population of this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember as a kid hearing Paul Harvey. How old is Paul Harvey? 100 and what?
Who knows?
Oh, my God.
But
so,
remember.
So
remember,
the children, men and women in Afghanistan are no different from the hijackers.
Yes. You know, they should not be referred as civilians. Remember, Mike, though, this is okay, but you're too edgy.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, oh, what? And apparently the boost is on to get our boy Fred Thompson up here in Tennessee's mug out there, because ABC has given him a little commentary and opinion show that runs in the mornings on ABC Radio.
Oh, my God.
I mean, so the push is on. What happened to ABC? I want to know, you know, what happened to ABC radio and television, which I know, actually they split now, but I mean, what happened? When did they go dark on us?
Look, whatever, I don't know how to explain it. I was going to say whatever pulls an audience, but that's not the case at all. Right-wing madness on radio and television has diminished the size of the audience. Liberals, Democrats, progressives, normal people left a long time ago. But that's not how ratings are figured. Ratings are not figured on what the potential audience might be. Ratings are figured on what the effective audience might be. And if you have a million people and somebody gets 10% of that listenership, then obviously they're getting 100,000 listeners. But if half a million of those listeners leave because there's nothing there for them anymore, that, and then somebody says, well, I get 20%. Well, 20% of half a million is the same as 10% of a million. So they can say, well, look at me, I've got 20%. And actually what they have is the same damn thing that they had when there were a million listeners who decided to walk away. This is how Neil Bortz manages to, and you're familiar with Bortz because you live right up here in Chattanooga. This is how Bortz manages to score so heavily in the Atlanta market. 70% of the Atlanta market for talk radio left a long time ago. But Bortz still sucks in all these right-wing brain-dead thugs, and that's true in so many markets. God, we could go on for hours about this, but you know this. R.W., I got to go.
I got to call you later about something else, but I'll call. We'll do it another time.
Okay, thanks, R.W. Right, appreciate it. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us, Truth Seekers.
Keep on rocking in the free world. Keep on rocking in the free world. Keep on rocking in the free world. Keep
on. Could result in the end to a worrisome trend in which every American not born again could be punished in cruel and unusual.
Yeah, kill that, kill that. Where in the hell did that come from?
In the mind of Frank Zappa.
I know, but I mean, that must have been a bad night when he put that one together. 10 before the hour. Thanks to our usual crew, Ian Huff, who answered your calls, engineered the program from KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. Thanks, Ian. Thanks to Billy Foster, who somewhere is lurking in the background making sure that all the wires are connected. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster, and the moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board. Don't forget, God forbid I should forget, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. She's staring at me through the glass here. Sucker, don't you forget me. Youth Night this Friday on the Malloy Show. Don't forget that. If you're between the ages of 13 and 17, we want to hear from you. Exclusively. That's all we're going to have that night on the program, our young folks. So do call in if the spirit moves you. Back to your phone calls. Jamie is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Mike. It's an honor to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I miss you out here in Columbia. Air America's gone way down. She left. They just got rid of Sam Cedar, too.
Yeah, I know.
Boy. It's a bummer. Yes, so anyway, man, while I was listening to your show, I came up with a solution for the Iraq war problem. We just get out. Yeah, we just leave. And anybody wants to come back with us can come back with us. So, you know, anybody thinks they're going to get massacred from the sectarian violence, just get on a plane with us.
Yeah, that would be a rational response to...
And all the contractors and everybody else just leave.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
But anyway, you've been liking Harry Reid lately?
Say it again?
Have you been liking Harry Reid lately?
I you know, any resistance to the Bush crime family to me is
driving me crazy.
Huh?
He used to drive me crazy for just years, but lately he's been kind of, you know, I've become a fan of his lately.
Well, he still drives me crazy. But like I said, any resistance to the Bush crime family on any level is resistance that otherwise wouldn't be there. And I think Reid is doing whatever his political courage or lack of courage allows him to do. You know, in other words, I guess what I'm saying is he's doing the best he can, given the fact that most of the members of my political party, the Democratic Party, seem to be cowards. So.
Yep.
Political cowards. So I guess Harry's doing okay, given all the things he could or could not be doing, but I'm still not satisfied with him, and I don't think you are either.
Oh, of course not. But if they could override the veto, I think the best thing they could do would be to start investigations on the oil companies, and that would pretty much solve all our problems.
Yeah, I don't think that'll ever happen. If Harry Reid...
At least trust-busting or investigations, but criminal...
I think it's way beyond that. I think anyone who would try to investigate or question oil company executives would turn up dead almost immediately.
I'm scared now. I even brought it up on national radio.
Yeah, well, be scared. Just make sure you're...
I'm all right. But I'm just saying, but that they seem clearly, you know, driving our country.
No. Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that, Jamie.
Well, thanks a lot, man.
All right, appreciate you checking in. Take care. All Take care. We'll look for you again. You got to have courage to listen to this program in Columbia, South Carolina. Well, no, Columbia, the University of South Carolina is there, so... No, that doesn't make any difference. You got to have courage to listen to this program in Columbia, South Carolina. Thanks, Jamie. And I have a son and daughter-in-law that live somewhere in South Carolina. I'm not going to say where. I've got good friends that live there, too, but you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying, Truth Seeker. Yeah, wouldn't you like to see an investigation of the oil companies the same way the tobacco companies were investigated, huh? Remember, was it 7 or 8 tobacco company executives that sat there and swore an oath that they didn't think that nicotine was addictive? And no, they never manipulated nicotine content of their cigarettes. Oh, my God. And what happened? Well, there was a lawsuit, and then there was this, and there was that, but not much has changed. I guess smoking as a percentage of the U.S. population has dropped, but the tobacco companies have increased whatever they lost here. They've increased tenfold in other countries. So, you know, so they have to pay $200 billion. It's nothing. It's nothing. Oil companies? Anybody who would suggest or try to put together an investigation of oil companies would be, within hours, would be made dead. Absolutely stone cold dead. It would be a car wreck or a plane crash or a boat accident or just a bullet in the back of the head while the person walked along the street in, San Diego or Washington, D.C. or Detroit or Toledo. It doesn't make any difference. The oil companies went through this with the breakup of Standard Oil way back in the early 20th century. And I think it's clear that they vowed it would never happen again. Never, ever, ever. That they would commit murder, mayhem, organize the invasion of countries, the execution of entire civilian populations. They don't care. They don't care. ExxonMobil, Chevron, Shell, I don't even know what the alignments are anymore. But there's about 4 or 5 major US or UK based oil companies, and you mess with them, you are dead. period. Oh, I'm not talking about somebody like me who just sits here like a little gnat buzzing around their ears going, bzzz, you know, it's nothing. I'm nothing. But a congressional inquiry, investigation, subpoenas, and I think every member of Congress, Democratic, Republican, committee members, subcommittee members, they all understand that. There is one entity on this planet that it is clearly understood if you mess with them or interfere with their cash flow, you will be made dead as quickly as possible. And that's the oil companies. That's one of the reasons I worry an awful lot about Greg Palast. Thanks for participating tonight, Truth Seekers. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.